Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Wake up! Wake up! Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Yeah, I can't remember what the station was in Minneapolis, but I'm pretty sure that Ron Coomer was a rock and roll DJ.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, Prince came from Minneapolis, from that area. You never know if Ron was playing a little basketball or going to a late night club at, you know, whatever it's called, the purple,
This bores me. Is anyone up for a game of basketball? How about you and your friends versus me and the revolution?
They never judge a book by its cover. This cat can ball, man. Prince is incredible.
This is just playing Prince.
Prince, you got a towel, man? It's kind of hot out here, man.
Why don't you purify yourself in the waters of Lake Minnetonka?
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Love listening to the show.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Do you feel it, Mr. David? It's the last Bears Monday, buddy. Last Bears Monday without Caleb Williams.
Morning, Mully. Yeah, happy Monday. It is draft week, thankfully, because it was quite a weekend otherwise. So there's something to look forward to in a positive way. Very difficult weekend. The Bulls and the Blackhawks have their season-ending press conferences on Saturday after the Bulls' disaster Friday night. The Cubs lose a series 2-2 to the Marlins. Boy, that was bad. And the White Sox, do we even mention the White Sox? Everybody knows what happened in Philly. I just don't know how many runs did they end up scoring and were we right?
God. They didn't score a run for what they were. They got shut out and then they got no hit for like seven
two,
and a third
two
innings.
Two nights in
something.
A row.
Yeah.
You're watching the White Sox thinking, okay, are they going to get no hit tonight? So it is with pleasure that we look forward to Thursday. It is with a little excitement, enthusiasm, and dare I say optimism that we look toward the Bears draft. We've been talking about it for a very long time. Draft week has arrived. And it couldn't come any sooner.
I love that in the bleachers on Friday, everyone just started chanting Caleb Williams.
Right. It reflects the fan base, right? It seems like eons ago that there was the debate, there was the argument, there was the Justin Fields camp, the Caleb Williams camp, the due diligence and the background checking. I think what's happened now is that the fun is back. You know, the fun, it can be fun to be a Bears fan. Embrace the possibility because it's a big week to think big. This is as good as it gets for the Bears fans because it's a challenge to find the last time, or maybe it's a good debate. We'll talk about it. When was the last time you felt this encouraged or hopeful as a Bears fan?
Probably when Justin Fields was drafted.
Do you think so?
No. That was fraught with peril. That was people on their way out the door allowed to make a move, allowed to stay, and allowed to make a franchise-changing move that was insane.
There was a counter to that argument, right? Yes. There was like, okay, we can get excited about Justin Fields. Boy, doesn't he provide some breathtaking highlight reel plays. But what are they doing with him? Should he sit? Should he? There was controversy. There was doubt. There was a divided camp, yes, even internally. This isn't that. This
Andy
is
Dalton.
No. Yeah. No. This is everybody on the same page, headed in the right direction, the same direction. The yelling has subsided. The arguing has stopped. You can have fun this week.
Yeah, this should be a really fun week because the, you know, the draft belongs to the Bears. They've got the number one overall pick, and the mystery is what are they going to do at number nine? We're hearing all sorts of different things that are rumored to happen. Are they going to move up? Are they going to move down? Are they going to stay put? It's just it's a real kind of head scratcher. I mean, in other words, we don't know. I don't mean it's confusing. I just mean it's not yet known, but what is known is Caleb Williams is coming to Chicago.
And because of that reality, because of that inevitability, the ninth selection, the conversation surrounding that makes it all the more, you know, exciting and relevant. Relevance is the word, I think. And what they do at nine is worthy of debate. We'll have it all week long, but it matters so much because the Bears are getting the best quarterback that's been available in several years. I don't want to get carried away. People depending, they'll say the best since Trevor Lawrence, the best since Andrew Luck. I've heard all of those things. But Caleb Williams, the more you hear from him, the more you want to hear.
I totally agree. The stuff that he's saying is great. I saw a thing online. That's not his real phone screen grab, is it? They have a thing of him. His plans are to be drafted number one and to be to win eight Super Bowls. Is that real?
He said that. I don't think the screen grab. I'm not quite sure.
I just like the idea of it. That's all.
It is a cool idea. All I know about the screen grab, according to the reporting, Dan Weider had a nice story in Sunday's Tribune, and he mentioned that, remember, Ryan Poles' son was distraught over trading Justin Fields because he had the poster. And after some YouTube highlights, I think that Mason is the child's name, is now on board with Caleb Williams and now has his phone screensaver on his computer, something to that effect, because Caleb Williams has on his phone, as he said on the Pivot interview, that he has a reminder of his goals, and it's just a daily kind of missive that he just looks at every day and says, okay, this is keep him moving in the right direction. So that's pretty cool. And you're going to hear stuff like that. And the more you hear of it, like, the more you're impressed by Caleb Williams.
So I was messing around in my little home studio over the weekend. I just cleaning some stuff up, and I got to get my Comrex box checked out, etc. Because we're going to be working on Saturday. We've got a special draft show on Saturday. We can have Kevin from Palatine call in and claim that I was saying things about the White Sox pitcher that I never said.
Oh, thanks for listening. I couldn't remember that either.
I never said it. You know how skeptical I've been about Garrett Crochet? I said it was great that they were starting him, but I didn't think he was going to – whatever, who cares?
Okay.
But I was down there, and I started listening to just old tapes of Bear stuff while I'm going around cleaning stuff and moving stuff around. And I'm listening to Matt Eberflus down in Florida, and he's asked a question about the draft. This is at the owners' meetings. And he said something to the effect that, well, the two questions you ask with every draft pick is how will it affect or how will it help the quarterback? Those are the questions. The question, and he's not talking about drafting a quarterback in Justin Fields. He's talking about how you look at draft picks. In other words, the most important position on the field, whether you have someone who can play it or not, is the one that all of your decisions are based upon, be it how does he stop the quarterback on defense, how does he impede what the quarterback wants to do as a defender, or how does he aid in protecting and being a weapon for, in being a target for the quarterback.
That's a good point. I mean, it's Flusi, that was at the owner's meetings,
yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
That's how long he's been looking forward to
I don't know why it didn't jump out at me when I listened to it at the owner's meeting, but as I was, you know, months later, just listening to it, I thought to myself, it's so true. Like, every decision you're making in football is got to be about how your team is impacted at that position.
Well, it's intentional. Everything about this offseason has been intentional, and it's been revolved around the fact that they're getting that quarterback now. And as ready as they have been, or as much as they have prepared their roster for this moment, I think that we can safely say that there's never been a situation that a number one overall quarterback has come into like this.
Right.
This is the most conducive situation, environment for success that a number one overall quarterback has ever had, because of the defense that Matt Eberflus, you know, was allowed to continue to run, because of the weapons they went out and got, because of just the way they have handled free agency. And now all they need is that missing piece. So that's what's exciting about it, because most times you get the number one pick, your team is struggling. The Bears feel like they're one quarterback away from being a playoff team.
Well, I mean, here's hoping, right? I mean, that sounds like a plan, and that sounds great. I am very interested in how that plays out on Thursday night, starting on Thursday night, because obviously you're going to take him, but that second pick, are they going to help him by getting him a weapon? Are they going to help him by getting him protection, or are they going the other way and are they going to get him a defense that can get him better field position, knock down the quarterback, et cetera?
I can't wait for Dave Wannstedt tomorrow morning to elaborate on what we talked about. We did a draft special on NBC Sports Chicago on Sunday night, and I talked about how if the ninth pick, and if you're Ryan Poles, you have to consider strongly if four quarterbacks go off the board, one through four, and you're sitting there and it's the fifth pick on the clock, you have to consider strongly moving up to get Marvin Harrison Jr. And then there's a shot of Dave on set, on camera, like he just had something, like he had a bad sushi for dinner.
Well, Dave told us already that he wants to get the best defensive player
exactly
on the board. And he thinks they need another pass rusher. The pass rush is not there yet.
And that he would maybe move down and trade down and
yes
then be in a position to draft the center. And, you know, as much as that, both would be considered extremes. I would think moving down out of that position and then ending up with a center is the extreme end on this side of it. And frankly, what my suggestion is, moving up and trading, you know, next year's first round draft pick and other draft capital you may have to get Marvin Harrison Jr., is a bold, extreme example of the other end of the spectrum. The point is, in between, there's a lot of room for conversation and a lot of possibilities. So you could take the best player, defensive player off the board. You could end up with a wide receiver and just stay at nine, pick Rome Odunze, and you'd still be laughing.
I agree. The Marvin Harrison thing, it feels like fantasy football. I mean, it's just, I love the idea of it. I've heard a lot of the different ideas about it and what it would take. But it probably would take your draft capital from next year. It would definitely be more – you wouldn't be coming out of the draft with much more than him, which, I mean, you could argue, if he's as good as we think he is, if you feel like you're coming out of the draft with the two best players in it, I think that's just an extraordinary – again, you know, the Bears once drafted Gale Sayers and Dick Butkus in the same draft.
We'd be making that comparison.
Well, I
to
suppose
that year,
we would.
Well, at least
Hall of Fame material.
And you're looking at two guys who, one in Caleb Williams is what we have just described, and two in Marvin Harrison Jr. that is considered by many people the best player in this draft.
Right.
If you get those two players on Thursday night, I feel like you won the draft.
Oh, it'd be unbelievable.
Because you have guys who are you right away. Now, the argument could be, well, why would you need a wide receiver, a rookie wide receiver, when you have two guys coming off 1,200-yard seasons in terms of reception yardage in Keenan Allen and DJ Moore? I'm like, there's always room for more.
Yeah, because it's not about last year. It's about the next year and the year after that, mm-hmm, the year after that. I mean, if you were to come away with a tandem like that, or even Roma Dunze, if you sat there and he fell to you, I think that you would have something that you would be seeing in Chicago for a very long time. I mean, you know, it's not about the next year. It's not about the next draft. It's about the next decade. It's about the next great team. And the one thing that they have said repeatedly, if you just listen to Ryan Poles talk about players, he has said repeatedly, we want multipliers. We want guys who can enhance the play of the other guys around them. Certainly, that's part of the definition of a quarterback. If you're a quarterback, you've got to enhance the play of those around you. And if you have a chance to bring in another player who can be a multiplier, and I keep going back to it, they've got two on their roster. They got DJ Moore, and they've got Montez Sweat, and they traded for both of them. So pick yourself a couple of multipliers in the top 10 this year.
Multipliers are great, and I think that's a lot to ask, but you just even elite players or players considered elite at their position, I would also include, I don't know if it fits the profile of your typical multiplier, but Jalen Johnson makes the pass rush better, and he makes your safeties better. I think Jermaine Edmonds, he makes guys around him better because you have this elite athleticism or the skill set that does that and allows you to say that. So what you need is the offensive
maybe
equivalent.
Maybe Brisker does that. You
Brisker in a way is like
can
is that guy.
Kyler Gordon be that guy this year if so he steps up a little?
All you've done is you've increased how many blue players you have in scouting terms. And what you want to do at nine is get another one of those guys. And if you have to move up to get somebody that you think is blue plus or whatever you want to describe Marvin Harrison Jr. as, I don't know that you are – hell-bent on doing it, but you have to have that conversation and you have to anticipate that moment. And that's all I'm saying is that as we sit here Monday morning anticipating Thursday night, the most fun draft that we're going to cover in a very long time, they've got to go through all this these simulations, and that's got to be one of them. What happens if the first four picks are quarterbacks?
Yeah, I mean, listen, and you're right. It is the most fascinating idea that's out there, and it's hard not to be seduced by it. But part of what you have to do, and they feel like they did a very good job of attacking the positions that they needed to address in free agency, right? They got a safety, which they had lost. They released their safety for a reason. He wasn't earning the money, Eddie Jackson, sadly. And now they bring in Byard, and you look at a guy like that, and they really like him, and they really think he's going to solve one of their problems. They brought in not one center, but two. They replaced both guys that they used last year at center, right? That Lucas Patrick, long gone, and out with the offense coordinator. And, of course, our Cody Whitehair is out with the offense coordinator. Lucas Patrick also gone. And they brought in not one, but two players at that position.
And they may draft somebody who makes both of those guys depth pieces. Okay. You don't know, but that's okay.
There's nothing wrong with that if they do it, but my point is simply they kind of addressed the biggest holes that they had on their team. So that gives them the leeway to kind of figure out who is the best player at number nine.
You don't want to go into a draft needing to draft for need. You want to go getting the best player available. That's always the luxury. Not every team has, but I think the Bears are in that situation this year when they get Caleb Williams one and whatever they do on nine.
And if they end up trading down, taking a pass rusher and trying to get more stuff, it's going to be hard for me not to feel like they did not get the pass rusher in free agency and then they had to do it in the draft.
I don't think we're going to come in Friday morning disappointed by anything
or
complaining, but I do believe that there will be a tinge of disappointment if at the number nine spot, Roger Goodell goes to the stage and he reads that the Bears have traded the pick, or we see it flash on the crawl, because it's an opportunity I would think that you have not taken advantage of, depending on who you end up with. But that's going to be a little deflating if they do that.
A friend of mine I talked to over the weekend said he thinks there's 15, 16 half of the first round is going to be really good players.
Mm-hmm.
So you could trade down a little bit.
You could.
You know, you could. But, I mean, is that what you want? You just kind of, I don't know how. I'm very excited. I'm very pumped up for this draft. And it's draft week, and I think it's very exciting.
Well, it's allowed us to move on from other things because the Cubs did not have a great weekend. The Bulls collapsed on Friday night, as many people expected them to do. Let's go there because that was really, really bitterly disappointing. And I don't know if it was terribly surprising.
I think because Jimmy Butler was out, you thought, wow, you know, this is a real opportunity for the Bulls to actually make the playoffs. And then instead they go in there, and I wasn't prepared. They played a really good game against Atlanta, and you knew the minute the ball tipped off that they were there and they were going to win that game. It was exactly the opposite feeling against Miami. They didn't turn up at all, David. They didn't turn up for that game.
The anticipated letdown, you played a Heat team that, because of the absence of Jimmy Butler, seemed like their intensity was heightened and sharpened and their focus was where it needed to be. And the Bulls never matched that intensity. They didn't shoot well. They didn't do a lot of things well. But you also have to give the Heat credit for being a big reason why that happened. They were ready from the opening tip. They got out to an early lead, and the Bulls just kind of fell back.
Fizzled.
They fizzled.
They did. There was nothing there to really hang your hat on.
Nothing there.
It was a terrible performance.
Terrible performance, and then the post-mortem on Saturday, we'll pick apart what AK had to say. But
it was
the Bulls,
weird.
They didn't make any progress this year.
No.
They ended the exact same spot in the exact same game at the exact same time, and we have the exact same feeling of they have to do something now, right? That's the way we felt a year ago, and they didn't.
Yeah, it was very deflating, and they were just—they did not look prepared. They just looked utterly unprepared for that game. It was awful. They never were in that game. They never led in that game.
No, it just wasn't one of those things where anybody got going specifically, and you know, DeRozan didn't quite get going, and it just was an easy game to you knew what was going to happen. It was just a matter of inevitability.
You're so right, David. And it was like one of those moments of kind of, you know, really? Is that where we're at? Is that what is going to happen here?
Well, based on the way the Celtics looked yesterday against the Heat, it might not have been such a bad thing because it would have been four games of torture. Oh, there would have been two home games for the revenue purposes. They might have allowed them to feel better about going into the luxury tax had they gotten to the playoffs.
The Caleb Martin thing at the end of that game, that was the most life that the Heat showed. they undercut Tatum.
That's going to be a short series.
They were down 38 at one point, I think. It was hardly worth watching. It was hard to sit in front of.
Yeah. So
were the Cubs, sadly, this weekend.
Were the Cubs, and shocker, especially yesterday, Sunday, Kyle Hendricks. A lot of attention, a lot of anticipation, hoping that you'll see something to cling to, and we just didn't. I felt like post-game Craig Council talking about, you know, what they saw. You're looking for things that aren't quite there. And Kyle Hendricks, four innings, four runs, and a home run that was hit to the lake.
You know,
464 homer. Oh, my gosh.
The home run wasn't the problem. It was when he comes out, was it the fourth inning, and gives up four straight singles? That's what was. You're just like, what? And then I think he ended up getting three outs after giving up three runs on four hits. How many pitches did he throw in that inning? It was like the weirdest inning I've ever seen. Everybody just crack, single.
There were some signs of progress if you looked closely enough, I suppose. But overall, big picture, you're kidding yourself if you think that was good enough and acceptable for a team that has the goals that the Cubs have. So they come out of the weekend splitting with the Marlins, and you have a Hendricks problem that persists, and you suddenly have a closer issue.
Well, it's not sudden. It's how do you go bankrupt? Very slowly all at once, right?
Suddenly. You're right. It's probably unexpectedly. Because I
agree. He had three blown saves all of last year. David, he's got four already. Yeah, already.
All on homers.
You just started.
He's given up the long ball too. And Adbert Alzolay had a chance yesterday to kind of get some work in a game that wasn't a high leverage situation. And he did well, but you don't look at that and say, okay, all's good now. You want to see him do it again, but I just don't know how much you can trust him now.
I mean, again, he's already exceeded the number he had a year ago. It's hard to believe.
Yeah, it's rough.
He's become as predictable as a White Sox shutout.
Hey, they scored yesterday. They scored yesterday,
yeah,
didn't
they? Aloy hit a two-run homer.
Okay.
That's finally Aloy. Welcome to the season.
And I thought Nick Nastrini was going to protect that lead, but he didn't.
Oh, boy. Nick Nastrini had a rough one.
I was going to declare him my new favorite White Sox pitcher, but then he gave up a lot.
Yeah, because Kevin will get on you about Crochet.
Fine interview. Oh, yeah. Okay, so to fill people in quickly, Kevin from Palatine called in Saturday, and he said that your partner had Crochet starting the All-Star game. I didn't remember you saying that.
Never happened. I was very skeptical about Crochet, but Kevin speaks from an orifice not usually associated with communication.
Was he talking about Bruce, maybe?
I don't know who he's talking about. But he named me, and I'm like, how can this weasel go around town claiming that I said things? I got enough problems with what I say. I don't need you adding to it.
You think he's going around town telling people, can you believe Molly said Crochet?
I hear the guy in a bar, like, hey, get a load of this one.
Yeah.
Derek Crochet to the All-Star game.
Rough weekend for the White Sox. Wow.
Oh, the White Sox are beyond embarrassing. And apparently the owner is beyond shame because they're not doing anything.
Nothing.
About it.
What can they do?
They've done nothing. Well,
they're on pace for 24 victories.
You know what I'd do? Here's what I'd do. I don't care if Nick Nastrini is starting or who's starting. If I had a catcher batting .065 and Corey Lee the night before broke up a no-hitter and got a second hit in the same game, I wouldn't have the guy that can't throw anyone out or can't frame a pitch as my starting catcher at age 37.
I agree.
Because what he did in Houston.
That's a good start.
Oh.
That's a good start.
So whoever's making that decision needs to go.
Martin Maldonado is a symbol of everything that we don't like about Pedro Grifol.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, why is he still 0.053 or something?
It is like he gets a hit every 20 at-bats.
Microscopic.
What is that? I know baseball's all about dealing with failure. You don't want to deal with that kind of failure.
It's going to be a long season.
You got a team of that going on. All right, we got to get to the pick six, all the stories of the weekend. We're going to have a lot of fun today. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Where are you with the Bears' second selection, the number 9 pick in the upcoming NFL draft? Should they use it to trade up for Marvin Harrison, trade down to recoup some draft picks, or stay and grab the best player available? Are you seeing any players develop a buzz like Byron Murphy, 11, who our guy Big Z wrote about on Sunday?
Yeah, Byron Murphy the second could be the guy that if they trade down, they could get him. As I've seen his name in a few different places, so I think he's making kind of a draft move a little bit. I look at the Bears, and I've been pretty adamant about taking what falls to you, because as you keep mentioning, David, if four quarterbacks go before the ninth pick in the draft, there will be a player that is available at nine that normally wouldn't have been available at nine and may be too talented a player to be at nine. It's almost like the gift the draft is giving you. I identified Roma Dunze as that player. I loved watching him and what he did this year. I'm trying to, I told you, for a month, I've been trying to get to the draft and get the Bears the quarterback and get the Bears the receiver and get on with my life. I feel like you're just kind of babysitting the possibility of take what the gift is. But they know their team a lot better than I do, and they've built their team pretty well. So I'm with you. I think we're going to come in here on Monday morning, and we're going to feel like the Bears won the draft, whether they traded down, whether they traded up. If they traded up, I think we're going to have a lot of fun conversations. But I think my preference is take what falls to you. Take the gift that is given to you by the draft gods. But I feel like they're going to move now and try to pick up pass rush help, which makes me wonder why they didn't do that free agency. And I guess the money's too expensive, but nonetheless, they got tons of money.
Well, I love the idea of making the phone call and moving up to get Maserati Marv. I love that idea because it is a
bold
franchise changing, either good or bad, move. It's go time. Give this supposed generational quarterback all the talent. So there's no excuses. There's absolutely, you know, no woulda, coulda, shouldas. Give him everything you could possibly give him. I hate the idea of trading down. If I'm ranking in order, trade up to get Marvin Harrison Jr. Mm-hmm. That's number one.
Okay.
Sit, as Mully is suggesting, at nine and take the best player available. I just, as much as, like, I feel like David's taking a direct shot at me with the whole take a center. You know, taking the defensive player there, I don't like that idea. That doesn't this what Brad wrote, and I'm not saying Brad's wrong. I don't like it as a fan, and I hate the idea of trading back. I don't like that idea at all.
It's not a shot at you. I was more general, kind of.
I'd rather take the best center in the draft than the fourth best tackle in the draft.
I don't want to move down. If I were looking at the Bears' options, conventional wisdom says you stay put and you draft Roma Dunze. I think that is maybe the safest way to give your quarterback a weapon that's proven and exciting at number nine, a guy who's going to make an impact quickly in the NFL. But I think the Bears could keep all their draft picks and be very happy with that move. It's just a matter of how do you wake up Thursday morning if you're Ryan Poles, and do you feel like making history? You making a little history or making a lot of history? And what you're able to do if you're feeling emboldened by this opportunity, and it would be an opportunity. If the first four picks are quarterbacks, then you've got to seize the moment. It's a rare one, but you would have an opportunity to give up draft capital to move up maybe to fifth, maybe to sixth, but unlikely. Move up to fifth to draft a wide receiver in Marvin Harrison Jr. that to many people is the best player in this draft. So you have the best quarterback in a decade available in the draft, and you're drafting the best player in the draft, and you're Ryan Poles, and you have now done something historic. You're going to make history anyway. Why not make it a little bit louder? This would be the way I would go into this draft thinking. You have to have that conversation if you're Poles, and if you're the Bears, there are no bad outcomes. There are no bad outcomes on Thursday night. You're going to feel better about your direction Friday morning. but how much better? Be bold.
Pick six.
How do you feel about Kyle Hendricks after he gave up four runs in four innings, including a home run nearly hit all the way to Lake Michigan? And how could and should the Cubs feel after their weekend home split against the lowly fish, the Marlinas, if you will?
Disappointed. I think they have to be disappointed the way they blew the game on Saturday in the first game of the doubleheader, and then to lose the series finale. Adbert Alzolay and Kyle Hendricks have emerged as the biggest question marks on that pitching staff. They have a closer issue. They've got a Hendricks issue. Kyle Hendricks gave up four runs in four innings, and we're talking about the positive steps that he made. Think about that. For a team that is in pretty good shape everywhere else, for a team that is legitimately a front runner in the NL Central and has realistic playoff aspirations, you can't wait forever. You cannot wait forever. And if there were positive signs and good steps and all of the feel-good language afterward, you can't also ignore the fact that this was the fifth straight time where he did not go beyond five innings. Killing your bullpen. You need him to have some length. You need him to have to go deeper, and he needs to be better. He knows it. Everybody knows it. It's just a matter of how long can you wait? What are you going to do in terms of an alternative? And where is this season headed if you don't do something? So I'm very curious to see if he gets another start, comes up with some sort of injury on the injured list, or what they do with Kyle Hendricks. Is he a bullpen guy at this stage of his career? I don't know, but he's not getting it done in the rotation.
Yeah, just not good enough, not getting it done. But I'm just flabbergasted that they split against the Marlins, and it goes back to game one. How in the world? Has anybody asked Craig Counsell the thought process? So you give Adbert Alzolay the ball again, and you're asking him to do a four-out save. What are you doing? Why didn't you have Hector Neris do that, and then maybe have Alzolay come in game number two? I just don't understand. And then, pregame yesterday. Well, he won't be the closer today. Oh. Okay, well, that's what you get for the highest paid manager in baseball. He finally realizes that on Sunday, Adbert Alzolay won't be the closer. But after being miserable, he asked the guy to get a four-out save. Doesn't make any sense to me at all. And why was he not asked to explain that? Explain it. Explain the thought process. Please. Go. And no, Kyle Hendricks doesn't deserve another start. He's not a bullpen guy, and he doesn't deserve another start at this point.
Well, Kyle Hendricks has tenure, and we all know it's hard to get rid of a tenured professor. So I don't know. This is a bad one. This is a real problem. There is no hiding the fact that this hasn't started well, and it hasn't shown any signs of subsiding. So contact the department chair. I think, first of all, if you're a fan, drop that class. You do not want to be watching the professor because you're not going to learn anything the way things are going. That fourth inning was bizarre, wasn't it? He barely faced, and he barely pitched. He got out of here. How many pitches had he thrown? Nine pitches in that inning. He was in the 50s when they had to pull him. Because Craig Counsell told you, well, you know, the left-handed heart of the order is coming up. We had to do something. It is bad. Kyle Hendricks, no gouda. You got a serious issue with rolling him out there again. I'm not sure. You got 16 straight games right now. You're off today. Then you play 16 in a row. You know what you can't do? You can't roll in a guy who can barely go four innings because you are going to use up your bullpen and you're going to have extended problems. Kyle Hendricks looks like an opener this year. He doesn't look like a starting pitcher.
To that point, entering yesterday, opposing batters were hitting .727, 8-for-11 with three homers, five walks, and no strikeouts when facing Hendricks for a third time in the order.
That's a problem, man. You got an issue here, Dustino. Solve it.
Wow, that's a good question.
And that's the voice of John Heyman. He's here at 725 with Mullion Haw. How disgraceful has the opening of the season been for the White Sox? Another shutout in Philadelphia, followed by nearly being no hit and another bad loss yesterday. Do you expect a reaction or anything from ownership? What should they do immediately?
Well, I hate to say it, but I don't know why Pedro Grifol has a job. I mean, I don't blame him, but he's overseeing a disaster. And you do feel like there's a guy doing the broadcast every day that has better ideas than the guy managing the team. I mean, I'm sorry, but that is just the reality of the situation. Does he deserve to get fired? Did they give him a team that can't win? I understand all that stuff. But they finally yesterday sat down the first baseman after the day before he went 0-for-3 with three strikeouts. He didn't get the golden sombrero because he didn't get another at bat. I mean, give me a break. You're one of the seeming building blocks that you've been relying on. He can't play. You got a catcher that doesn't belong in the organization, doesn't belong in baseball, and you're rolling him out there. You've got so many guys that can't hit their weight, and you're not doing a damn thing about it. Andrew Benintendi, why is he on this team? He's terrible. Poor Lenin Sosa tries to run down Bryce Harper and then realizes Trey Turner is going to score, so he throws the ball into next month.
Why is he poor Lenin Sosa?
Because he's forced to play.
He's bad.
He's forced to play because they have injuries.
Don't
everywhere.
Stick up for Lenin Sosa.
I feel bad for him because
he should have been benched.
He's been totally exposed. The fact of the matter is that this is a really poorly constructed team. You hired the wrong people in the wrong positions, and you left them there. And it comes down to the only guy that can make any changes is the owner, and he needs to do it. And why are we waiting? What's the point? Do something.
Did you call for John Schriffen to manage this team?
I mean, I don't think I did, but that's better than Pedro.
It's hard to blame Pedro, but it's what Pedro says. If we just put our foot on home plate more times than the other team, we'll win the game. And you know, I've seen streaks like this. I've been parts of No. You haven't been part of a streak like this. This is a franchise worse streak. Yeah. This team has been around for over 100 years. They've never been this bad ever. The first thing I think is you have to get rid of the catcher. I mean, if you're talking about something today, like immediate, that's like actually could possibly, I mean, sure, they should sell the team today. They should cancel the season today. They should forfeit tonight's game in Minnesota, and they should just go back to 35th and Shields and work on fundamentals. But those things aren't going to happen. But the first thing you could do is sit a catcher down that can't frame anymore, can't stop the ball, and is hitting,
can't throw anyone out.
057. That's the first thing you should do.
They're on pace to win, what, 24 games?
23 or 24 terrible. Games, something
they're
like that.
First.
Yeah.
You're not going to accomplish anything by firing the manager, but you have to do something at some point that's not fair, but what is. Ozzie Guillen would be a obvious alternative. I don't know if they would consider that. That would be such an admission, and I don't know that I would want
it
Ozzie.
It would be stupid not to.
I don't know if I would want Ozzie to endure all that the next manager, the current manager, any manager is going to endure with a team that has no talent, that has paid the wrong guys and made some poor decisions. And I don't know if there's help on the way or not. You look at Jonathan Cannon, tonight's pitcher. You look at Nick Destrini, Sunday's pitcher, and you wonder if there's hope there. But it's hard to see. It's microscopic evidence of some sort of hope. And you've got to do something to change the subject or to give people something to believe in. Right now, there is absolutely nothing except for a common belief that Jerry Reinsdorf needs to sell the team sooner rather than later.
Both questions are hard.
That's the voice of Casey Johnson. He is here at 8 o'clock. What do you make of our guy, Casey Johnson, reporting that the Bulls have offered DeMar DeRozan a 2-year deal for as much as $40 million a year, but DeRozan is looking for more years. Will he be back next year?
Both sides want to get this done. Both sides are motivated, I think, to find a common ground. So there
there's a sense that there will be a compromise. We'll talk about what Arturis Karnišovas had to say about the future of the Bulls in the next question. But I think when you look at DeMar DeRozan, if they are convinced that he is going to be somebody they want to keep and they're going to build around him or find a way, because let's face it, if you're going to pay DeMar DeRozan, you know, $35 to $40 million a year, you're accepting all that that represents. And he is the master of the mid-range. He does things offensively that you're not going to be able to do if he is the guy that's taking all the big shots. And he is Mr. Clutch, and you love that. You love that about a veteran who has been terrific and on his way probably to the Hall of Fame. But I don't know that you're going to make the kind of significant change to your roster if you're going to reinvest in somebody with his game, with that skill set. So it may be a complicated equation, but I do think that if both sides are motivated to get it done, they're going to get it done.
I like DeMar DeRozan a whole heck of a lot, but I think that's just insane cash for DeMar DeRozan. So you pay DeMar DeRozan, we'll say $35 million a year for 2 years. And what, you lose in the play-in? If he couldn't will that team to beat the Heat on Friday night, what makes you think that over the next 2 years, because all of a sudden Zach LaVine's no longer going to be there? What we need to know is, what are you doing with Max LaVine's money, right? That's what you need. Who are you partnering? Because running this thing back minus Max LaVine gets you where exactly?
Well, and that's the thing. You are exactly right, Dustin. You can talk all you want about being willing to change and the team we put together hasn't worked out and we're going to change it. Does that mean that Zach LaVine's gone? Is that it? Does that count since you didn't have him this year effectively? Is that what you're saying? That you're going to roll back the same group other than him? I gotta wonder. I love DeMar DeRozan. I got a lot of time for him. I think he's had a phenomenal career. I don't know how you get better. I do not know how you get better if you're rolling the same guys back. And, you know, I get it. You know, you look at the contracts and you can't help but, you know, Nikola Vukovic is going nowhere, right? He's still under contract himself. How are you getting any better? I mean, you gotta bring Kobe back. You gotta bring Caruso back. Io deserves to be back here. Now you want Patrick Williams back? Why? Because you don't have to pay him? You got to find guys you won't pay?
You're gonna have to pay him.
Well, this is my point though. How much can you afford to pay him? He's not worth it. I'm telling you, they got real serious problems with this group. And Dustin's right. If you can get rid of that money, but David, let's say you're trading Zach LaVine. You're trading him for either someone else's problem or you're going to eat half the damn contract.
Well, no, that's a good question.
Well, that's the voice of DeMar DeRozan. What did you think of AK postseason addressing the media on Saturday, especially when he said this about the Bulls' policy on the luxury tax?
My approach looking at the luxury tax is like, if you can prove that your team is going to be in the top four, you go in a luxury tax. And I think, you know, it just makes no sense to, let's say, to be in a fringe and to be in playing if you're going to be in the luxury tax. So as long as I can, you know, put a team together that can be competing in top four, that's when you're going to start looking at to go in east, I would say. That's when you start looking, retaining guys and going in a luxury tax. I think that would be my approach.
All right, your reaction to his approach on the luxury tax.
I don't think you need to worry about going into the luxury tax because I don't think he's going to get this roster into a position where you go into a season thinking, wow, you know, the Bulls are going to be in the top four in the East. The Bulls are going to be in the play-in game, right? That's the upside. The the chance to make the play-in game seems more capable for them, the 9 seed, the 10 seed, than actually being able to finish as the 4th seed. How are they possibly? I mean, you know, barring the injuries being really severe, okay? If Joel Embiid is indeed going to be somehow have to have surgery and miss next season, if Giannis blew out his Achilles tendon, you're praying for major, you're never getting past Boston no matter what. What are they talking about? That's a pie in the sky. They're under the luxury tax. This is what we learned, and they're not going to be very good.
Well, it almost goes into that clip that we had from Jerry Reinsdorf, where I don't know if he realized that he was being recorded. Like, you just do well enough. You just do well enough that you fill the building every night. You're selling hope. You're selling. We're just on the cusp of it. But I gotta say, the Celtics are really good. No doubt. Cavs, they're pretty good. The
Knicks,
they're okay. All right. But they're just okay. And yeah, they're the second seed. My point is like, tell me how you can build a team that can get past, like, okay, like, you could, I think they could be top four with the right moves, but what are the right moves? Is it the right coach? And is it, you know, when he tells me that Patrick Williams is coming back, that just, to me, automatically means you don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you're doing. Patrick Williams is not part of anything top four, except top four overpaid people in the NBA.
Saturday was the first time that Arturs Karnišovas said and acknowledged publicly that this group hasn't worked. Everybody agrees and understands that. And I think that was progress. I didn't like the way he presented the message. I don't think you need to read off a prepared script if you're speaking from the heart and speaking in a way that everyone can relate to. It clouded the message a little bit, or maybe it dulled the impact, because I don't think at this stage, 4 years on the job, you need to do that. You shouldn't speak from the heart. And I think that it would resonate a little bit. Now, talking about what they haven't done, I think that was a good sign of progress. He understands this group hasn't worked. They're going to have to get creative. We don't know what it is, but it is the NBA. We do know that teams find ways to get creative to change and to overturn their rosters. I don't know about Vooch moving forward. I don't think Patrick Williams deserves to be paid big money to stay. They've got to find a partner for Zach LaVine. All of these things. And they have to be willing to go into the luxury tax. The top four thing, it does create this kind of game where we're guessing, what did he really mean? Is this Jerry Reinsdorf's edict? Does it for a top four in the East mean you have more home revenue because you're going to get more playoff games and you're going to be the home team in those playoff series? All kinds of skepticism, which is appropriate when you have a team as underachieving as the Bulls have been. I liked what he said. But now he's got to back up those words with some strong and bold actions. I don't know if he's capable of it, and I don't know that his delivery was very convincing and won over anybody who might have been on the fence.
These are concerns and questions that people are asking.
All right, let's talk some Blackhawks. What did you think overall of the tone of the comments from the Blackhawk players or the GM, Kyle Davidson, when they spoke Saturday after a 53-6 season? Anybody's words stand out?
Kyle Davidson said that losing is over. Good. They need to be in contention next year for a playoff spot, even if they don't get there. They need to be more competitive and start winning now. What stood out was Seth Jones basically calling out the organization for having too many guys that weren't necessarily good fits. Tyler Johnson also. Everyone had the same type of tone. Boy, this was tough. Boy, it's hard to win when you have guys on one-year contracts that aren't kind of pulling in the same direction. It implied that Luke Richardson has done a better job of getting this team to actually compete on a regular basis than maybe we give him credit for. I liked hearing from Connor Bedard. I know he's going to be playing for Team Canada over the offseason, just as long as he doesn't get hurt. Nick Foligno, very strong as well. You heard some accountability from the Blackhawks, and that's a good sign because they've got a long way to go still.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with accountability, that's for sure. And I I like the fact that Kyle Davidson saying, okay, we are at the point where we don't want to be in the position where we're competing for the top first, second, third pick in the NHL draft. They want to be better. All right, well, then let's see it, right? Let's see if they get lucky again in the draft. Let's pair that person with Connor Bedard. Let's find a – they got to find a better goalie probably, right? Am I wrong about that? You're okay with the goalie right
Mrazek
now?
Mrazek had a heck of a year for a team that
for
was
the
that
team
bad.
That's that bad? Okay. Yes. I mean, you know, I just – it's I guess it's easy to blame everything on the goalie, but yeah, they're just – they're still not great on the blue line, right, and all that. So they've got a lot to do, but I'm glad they're – like accountable, at least they're not hiding from it.
Yeah, they gotta start winning. They're moving into a different point of the rebuild next year. They still are very young. They still are going to have more talent coming in. They still have a lot of picks in this year's draft. But I think that just for the health of the organization, for the health of the guys that are there, and I don't mean physical health, I mean mental health. At some point, you know, even with gym rats like Bedard, you can't keep showing up and losing every night. You can't keep looking for moral victories because you played better than someone thought or there was a great individual moment in a game. I think it's only fair to the guys that are showing up and working that you go out. And, you know, I thought Jones said it well. Like, go out and get some free agents. You know, go out, spend some money. It's exactly what you need to do. You need to get better. And they, you know, they just weren't competent. There were times they were really exciting and they were really fun. And like I said, the young talent, especially Bedard, worth the price of admission. I think people love that. But good God, get better. And the guys you sign have to hold up so you can trade them. Or they got to hold up so you don't have to get rid of them and they end up playing elsewhere because – they were bad citizens. You got to do a better job of that. Period. End of story.
It's going to be tough, though. It's going to be tough with all of the talent that they don't have, and they need to be aggressive in free agency. Anybody out there who they might be able to sign to score some goals, I think they're more challenged offensively than defensively, especially with some of their young talent. But they big offseason for them, too.
All right. We've got the extra point next. We're going to continue the discussion. We'll do that when we return Mullion Haw on the score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mullion Haw on 670 The Score.
As NFL draft week begins, just how big is this Bears draft compared to others either you have covered or can remember? Is all of it just talk, or it's more real, or is it more exaggerated?
I think overall, just in terms of the organization, the draft is the next big thing, and it feels like it is monumental. And I think you have to go back, and we're projecting a bit. We're looking at what the Bears have done to the roster and what they're capable of doing once they add these pieces. And it feels like, in terms of hope, I'm not sure that there's been this much real hope surrounding the Bears organization since maybe 2019. That's the last time you could feel it. But this feels even more real or justified in terms of that, because that was kind of snuck up on everybody. This feels like it's been planned and strategized and orchestrated. You go back to maybe in terms of like the 2006, 2007 time, coming out of the 2006 season after the Super Bowl appearance, everybody thought the Bears were on the verge of going back and maybe winning one. So I think it's been a long time for a team that hasn't had a playoff victory since 2011. There's a lot of hope in terms of history. You're making history by drafting Caleb Williams. You think you're going to make more because of his arrival. It makes you feel like this is big in terms of significance. You go back to the NFC Championship game that they won. You go back to hiring Lovie Smith, which was huge. I think that those are big moments in Bears history, and Thursday night represents, I think, another one that's going to one day stack up to those other ones. That's why we're having this sense of anticipation. That's why this feels like it is so much fun. That's why you want to be there and watching and participating and just not missing a moment of anything that is said or anything that you see on Thursday night. So yeah, this is as good as it gets. This is as big of a draft that I can remember. And I don't know that it measures up to any one draft in terms of anticipation. Maybe maybe the one where I think it's bigger than Trubisky, the move up. It's bigger than Justin Fields. In terms of drafts, I can't think of one that I've covered that's any bigger.
No, nothing's been bigger. You've got two picks in the top 10 in a draft that looks really good on paper, at least on the offensive side of things. There's a lot of people that can score touchdowns in this draft. So the hype is real. Now, what they do with the hype. I mean, Mully, you mentioned this in the first segment of the show this morning. You know, how many Mondays after today will not be with Caleb Williams? I mean, is this a 5-year run? Is it an 8-year run? Is it a 10-year run that Caleb Williams is QB1 for the Bears every Monday morning for their how long after this one? I think that's what is so impactful about this, because this is a league all about the quarterback. It's all about that. So that's why I think this is so huge. And then what you might pair with him at number 9.
Yeah, I think, Dustin, that is the thing. You know, when the kid says he wants to play 20 years, good God, that sounds great, doesn't it? I think what you're looking forward to is the next decade. I think what you're looking forward to is how his career plays out, how much better you have to get. You know, the reality is that they're going to take Caleb Williams, and this is a huge, huge moment. This is their biggest draft since, frankly, last year. Last year's draft, they had the number one pick. They traded it awful early, but you knew they had gotten all sorts of stuff. And they went into that draft, and there was just a lot of kind of fun speculation about what they would do. You know, when Javon Carter was still there at 10 before they traded down, you thought, wow, like they're going to wind up with the guy that they might have taken number one had they kept the pick. But it's just a super cool thing to have the second of the two first-round picks. So I think that it's a fait accompli that Caleb Williams is coming with the number one overall pick, and we've known that for a while. And the build-up to that, including the trade of Justin Fields, is telling you absolutely this is what's going to happen. And I think we've all known it for a very long time. So it's more kind of solving or just, you know, pulling that one through to fruition. And then you get a chance to watch a guy and feel like he's, as you said, David, he's entering. Normally you are the first pick and you're going to a really bad team and you're going to have to suffer for a while. But this could be 2 years running where you take the quarterback with the second pick, and all of a sudden you're in the playoffs. I think that that there is that possibility here. And you know, the Bears still have a couple teams they got to jump, and we're not going to just push it forward. But this is a multiplier. This is going to be tons of fun to see how it works out. I think the second pick is just as fascinating, because there's so many different ways to go. And the idea that you can come out of this draft with two impact players, and that changes the way you think of how good this team is. The more blues you have, the better you are as an organization. And if you get the right players, then they're going to make everybody else look better anyway. So you may wind up with like 8 or 9 guys that you think are blues, because of the fact that you've got a pass rusher that can carry the whole line, because you got a couple of receivers maybe and a quarterback that can carry the offense. It's really a fun time to be a Bears fan.
So much fun when you can ask all kinds of questions and you're going to like every answer.
Yeah.
There's no wrong answer.
No, you're right.
There really is nothing they could do, I don't think, that could make people feel bad about this first round of the draft.
I think you should feel great about it. And even as you say, you know, if you trade, I mean, I don't want him to trade down. I'm like Dustin. I think that's the last one on my list of things. But if you did that and you pick up some more, you know, draft cap, they only have 4 picks, because they've already brought in Keenan Allen and Montez Sweat and Ryan Bates. They've already used their draft class is already half chosen, for God's sake.
It is.
312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
And I had one other question for you guys. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this on several shows, how we get our head out over skis on players way, way too quickly. So as Garrett Crochet was getting a neck injury last night, watching all those balls fly out of that park, and after one start, David, your partner had him starting the All-Star game.
Ay, ay, ay. That's some idiot calling into your show on Saturday morning. I was driving around, and I heard...
Listen to Inside the Clubhouse?
Of course.
Every Saturday, 9 to 11.
Don't miss it.
Yeah.
Greatest guests ever acquired.
We did. Did it again.
Yeah, I know. It's always the same story.
Streeny.
Pretty good stuff.
He was better on the air on Saturday than he was on the mound on Sunday.
Yeah, he was terrible. And he's going to start the All-Star game. So Kevin apparently is called to apologize. 312-644-6767. Kevin, what do you want?
Good morning, Kevin.
Mully, we were referring to Bruce this Saturday.
No, you were referring to me. You said that I was out over my skis about Garrett Crochet.
No.
Yeah, you did.
Bruce was the partner Saturday. I just re-listened to it. It was about Bruce. It wasn't about you.
No, because David, you said your partner during the week. I never said that. Don't be going around to bars telling people I'm saying that.
You've been critical the whole time of Crochet. If I misspoke, I was talking about Bruce, not you. You've been super critical, and you didn't think it was going to work.
I did not.
You were the one who had the funny joke about the opening day starter. So, Mully, I was referring to
opener day starter.
Yes, opener day starter. Amazing. So now that we have gotten that cleared, and Mully, I know the rule. If you want to confront, you guys always say it. You want to confront a host, call that show.
That's right.
So I would never do that. I've been calling long enough.
Thanks, Kevin.
So we always want to talk, and last time you said you got to blame the players. So I have plenty of players to blame. Morrell and Swanson both need to be moved down in the order. Morrell has been horrific for the last 15 games.
You know, we came up to bat yesterday with the bases loaded, and I sat there and thought, he's going to break out of this with a grand slam. I really, honest to God, had that thought go through my head, and he struck out.
But there is a little more to go around, too. Altuve, he's been horrible, which I said to David on Saturday. Hendricks has to stop. But also, that there was also Jed losses this weekend. But there was one thing that the $40 million manager did that really pissed me off this weekend. Michael Busch is 26 years old. He does not need to sit Friday and sit Saturday. And I don't care if Sandy Koufax comes back. You do not sit Bellinger and Busch in the same game. So I'm sorry. Those were first guesses. Michael Busch is 26. He doesn't need to be babied. I think he's third in all of baseball in OPS. So that was BS. And I agree with Dustin. Pitching Altuve, that was nonsense for the four-out save for the guy who can't get anyone out. So we sprinkle all fields, the players, the GM. But how do you feel about that? It kind of ruined the buzz of the great road trip losing because that team is god-awful. And if Hendricks had faced the same team that Crochet faced on Friday, Hendricks would have given up 25 runs. So he got lucky that he was playing a garbage team with the wind blowing in, and the guy still hit an 850-foot homer. Thanks, guys. And
thanks,
Mully,
Kevin.
I was not referring to you. Have a great
Thank
day.
You,
Good
buddy.
Stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah, that first game lineup was strange on Saturday. That was a very odd lineup. I know he was playing because it was a doubleheader, but no Bellinger.
That was weird.
A little unusual. And then to blow it the way they did. So do you accept his apology or not?
I got to go back and listen to it because I know what I heard. And I believe you've mentioned me too.
I didn't know if I had missed something.
Yeah, I was stunned. Again, I'm driving. I'm hearing a guy.
Well, I asked him to clarify. Did I implicate you? Or did
you
I
didn't
ask...
implicate me.
Yeah.
You said nice things.
I questioned whether or not you said that.
No, I didn't.
And
that.
I know that he said,
listen, I'd like him to be that.
But
be great.
Let's point. Bruce didn't exactly.
Didn't
you know,
bail anyone out.
He didn't come out.
No.
Said, that was me.
No, he didn't.
I had one other question for you guys. Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about this on several shows, how we get our head out over skis on players way, way too quickly. So as Garrett Crochet was getting a neck injury last night, watching all those balls fly out of that park, and after one start, David, your partner had him starting the All-Star game. We were saying ace. People were calling up about multi-year contracts. He's never pitched over 50 innings. So can we maybe – I'm not saying he doesn't have the possibility to be a rotation guy, but can we maybe slow down a little bit on ace, best pitcher in Chicago, stud? If he makes 100 innings this year and doesn't get hurt, consider that a win. But last night, expect a lot more of that, because the start before that, he kind of got his ass kicked too. So can we just slow down just a tad on the ace talk? Thanks,
guys. Which partner is he talking about?
Thanks, Kevin. I think he's talking about my weekday partner.
Aha.
So is that me?
Apparently.
That's your voice. Yeah. I mean,
apparently
that was
you're the one who
that
said
was
a, I
that
was
you co-host with Bruce.
I didn't know who he was talking about.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I didn't think then.
So I followed your lead.
Bruce was sitting right there. And Bruce, if he was talking
Bruce
about
dodged,
Bruce.
Yeah, Bruce dodged that
I thought
one
Bruce
pretty good.
Would say, well, I'm going to defend all myself right. here. Right. So he was talking about Bruce.
And then Bruce said, who's he talking about?
And I said,
you
talking
said
about
me.
You?
Okay. But I never said any of that. I have been so skeptical about this whole thing.
At least you got to the bottom of that.
Yeah. All right. Interesting. Now I got to rethink all my allegiances and alliances.
Oh, boy.
It's Mully and Haw. It's Chicago Sports Radio 670. The score 312-644-6767. We're going to stick with your calls on Chicago Sports Radio 670. The score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.